Good afternoon. This is March 25th, 2021, and I call the board study session of the Euroland Unified School District Board of Education to order. It is now 4:31. Dr. Mitchell, would you roll call, please?
Yes. Agnes Gonzalez?
Here.
David Malkin?
Present.
Eric Venegas?
Here.
Donna Friedman?
Here.
Carrie Chen.
Here.
All board members are present.
Thank you. We have a motion and to adopt the agenda of the board study session of Thursday, March 25th, 2021.
I'll move.
Donna, move. I need a second.
I'll second.
Who was the second?
It's
Eric.
Eric, second. Okay, thank you. Discussion? Roll call. Donna Friedman?
Aye.
Agnes Gonzalez?
Aye.
David Malkin?
Aye.
Eric Venegas?
Aye.
Carrie Chen, aye. 5-0. Motion carries. Okay, flag salute. I will lead the attendance for a Pledge of Allegiance in the flag. Please rise. Raise your hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Please be seated. Dr. Mitchell, are there any comments?
No, there are no public comments.
Right, no public comments. Okay, let's skip that one. Okay, study. Next, Educational Services team will provide the board with information on current school year student support to mitigate learning loss, summer 2021 learning programs, and a 2021 to 2022 school year planning for in-person learning and virtual options to allow for parent choice. We'll turn this to Dr. Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell, please.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Chen. So for this evening's study session, our Educational Services Department has planned a presentation, as Mr. Chen has shared, to provide you with information that's taken place thus far this school year, what's tentatively being planned for the closing of this school year, as well as summer 2021 and for the 21-22 school year. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Zamora.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. I'd also like to invite Dr. Rivas, Dr. Rodriguez, and Dr. Huff. They're joining me tonight on the presentation. So tonight, as it was mentioned, Educational Services will be providing an overview of the continuity of learning and mitigation of learning loss for the year of 2020-2021, school year 2020-2021. Next slide, please. So as we talk about the year, what we are currently doing from August of 2020 through March of 2021 present, we are currently in virtual learning. Our students continue to learn online for their entire school day. We will go into sharing the schedules and some of the activities that happen during virtual learning during the day. We will also be sharing with the board our work around as we move into students being in school for part of the day from April 26th through June 4th. We will be sharing with the board information about our summer school program that begins in June and it goes through July of 2021. And we will also talk a little bit about the fall 2021 as we move into a new school year, looking forward to it being more normalized than we currently are. So on this slide, what we see currently is our current demographics. So we have 12,741 students, TK-12, 3,600, 3,066 of them are English learners. Our current special ed population is 1,448, foster youth is 64. Our students that are homeless are 2,128. Economically disadvantaged students, Title I students, 9,437. And there is a new section that has been added per Senate Bill 98, which is students that are designated as disengaged students. And these are currently 868. What this means is that we have students that are chronically absent / disengaged for 10% or more of the school days that they have been enrolled. This is a new category. Next slide, please. Loss of learning mitigation from last August to current date. So in our current schedules, and we will share those in a few minutes, you will see that our students have a daily schedule that is as close as possible to brick and mortar. It includes small group instruction in the afternoon. We will share with you some professional development that we have provided for our teachers across the district and support staff as well. Academic support, we will talk a little bit about the support that has been given to these specific groups of students. Our students with IEPs, our students designated as English learners, some of the tutoring opportunities that we have put in place, as well as provided students with independent reading resources. We will also share with you some of the things that we have done to address the whole child, the re-engagement plan, which addresses those disengaged students, as well as the wonderful things that our Family Resource Center is contributing in supporting our students and parents. We also have some other supports that we've put in place for parents, aside from what our Family Resource Center is currently doing. Next slide, please. I know this is a little bit small to see. I know that you have a paper copy and that might be easier to follow. So this is our TK through kindergarten daily schedule. And in the morning, it is pretty much the core of the day is taught in the morning. So we see English language arts being instructed during the morning. We see math, we see English language development for students who are English learners, which is required. We see science and social studies. We also see breaks in there that our teachers provide our students so that they can take a quick stretch break and maybe move around for a little bit before coming back to class and participating online. So after lunch in our kindergarten group, we see 30 minutes devoted to small group instruction. So this is based on what our teachers feel our students are needing. It could also be an extension of the morning. So for example, if I feel that I need a little bit more time in math, I may do it during these 30 minutes, or I may do small group instruction based on student need. So this time was designated for that to happen. We've also put in place a 30-minute teacher feedback time where our teachers can meet with students one-on-one, provide them with feedback. This time is also at teacher discretion. Some of them use it for continued work on intervention, and some of them do provide that ongoing feedback as they feel and see is necessary so that our students are kept abreast of their areas of needed improvement or perhaps outlining how they can improve on a particular subject or a particular type of assignment. Next slide, please. This is our first to sixth grade daily schedule. And here you see the same thing, the core is in the morning. For TK6, the teachers were allowed the ability to move these areas around. So for example, if I don't want to teach English language arts from 8:10 to 10 in the morning, and I wanna do math, I can do that. So we did give that flexibility for teachers to move the subjects around. However, the core is still in the morning. We have English language arts, we have math, we have ELD, we have science and social studies. So the core subjects still remain in the morning. However, the sites were given the flexibility whether they wanted to do it by site, by grade level, or by teacher. They had that opportunity to do that. So there is a block here, a group check-in, check-out. That also can be moved around. So some teachers do it before lunch, some teachers do it after lunch, and some teachers do it right before the end of the day before dismissing students. From 105 to 205, you see small group instruction. Again, with the flexibility of extending instruction if they feel the need. So if, again, if I want to continue with my math lesson, I can do that during that 1 hour. You can see on this schedule that that is an hour long from 105 to 205. Or I can do small group instruction. Some kids work with me while other students are doing asynchronous work. And I may check in on them a little bit later after finishing with the small group, or the teacher can do whole group reteach, whole group intervention. It really provides them the autonomy. And then from 205 to 235, we see here teacher feedback time. Again, this is teacher discretion. They have the ability to extend their work for an hour and a half if they wish to do so. Or use that time for student feedback. Next slide, please. This is a secondary schedule for middle school and high school. And in this schedule, we see that the periods in the morning, they're full blocks. They're 80 minutes long. We see a break in there for our students. And then we see lunch. Again, the afternoon. If you can see here, on Monday mornings, I am spending 80 minutes with period 7, period 1, period 3, period 5. In the afternoon, I'm seeing the alternate periods, period 2, period 4, period 6, and if I have a period 0, I spend 30 minutes with them, perhaps reiterating a skill, providing more clarity on a lesson, or small group instruction, or one-on-one support. These 30 minutes in the afternoon with those periods are designed to provide the teacher the opportunity to touch base with the students that they're not seeing that morning, and the opportunity to provide some sort of intervention. Again, teachers determine what the need is and what they will be providing during those times. Next slide, please. So this just reiterates the opportunities that we have for small group instruction. I've shared some of those. It's embedded in the daily schedule. Teachers provide personalized instruction. Perhaps I'm working with two or three students. I may be working with my entire class. This time allows teacher to also monitor students independently or in small groups. Perhaps re-engage our English learners. It's flexible. Their rosters don't have to stay the same. I said they can also change their groups based on assessments and provide feedback. At the elementary level, this reiterates what I just shared with the board. Whole group instruction in the morning, small group instruction in the afternoon. The small group instruction in the afternoon can also be around social emotional support to our students. It can be checking in to make sure our students are doing well, perhaps building in some activities to engage the class and feeling more of a community, a feeling of community and a feeling of getting to know each other, perhaps provide assessments or enrichment. Slide, please. Secondary, it's the same type of model. In the morning, we provide certain periods that are 80 minutes long. That provides a good amount of time for students to dive deep into their courses. And in the afternoon, again, small groups. Teachers have the opportunity to do check-in with students and provide those connected activities that encourage connectedness within the class. and as well as using those times to do other things such as provide feedback and assessments and enrichment. Next slide, please. Professional development. At the elementary level and the secondary level, before I go into these, I just like to share with you that we provided micro courses at the beginning of the year that really supported our staff, our teachers in how to provide instruction through virtually. And these micro courses supported teachers in supporting students with cognitive load, student agency, how to do assessments via online, how to provide meaningful feedback online, and keeping things simple so that students would be able to adjust to this new way of learning as we continued after last spring into virtual learning this school year. Aside from that, you can see that our coaches provided support via community of practice groups, workshops, one-on-one support for our teachers. We provided professional development on the units of study for our elementary teachers, math, specifically around fractions, brain camp, Edgenuity, technology, the micro courses I just mentioned, Green Ninja, which is science-based support, as well as balanced literacy for our special education teachers, and dual immersion. Next slide, please. So it's secondary. We provided the technology support, the micro courses. We also provided opportunities for our teachers to attend conferences that were provided by the LA County Office of Education around math and science. At both the elementary and secondary level, we have had teachers attend virtual conferences. I do approve those, specifically after school or during a different time that teachers can attend and want to attend. We do fund those, and we do provide the opportunity for our teachers to attend those. We've provided professional development around English language development, training for new textbooks, as well as Gizmos, which is an online support for science. And we continue our professional development around the focus areas of each site. For special education, here are some of the professional development that has been provided, not only for our teachers, but also for our paraprofessionals, our school psychologists, and teachers that have moderate to severe students in their classrooms also receive very specific professional development. Some of the professional development is in line with what is provided in the general education classrooms and for our general education teachers. However, some of it is very specific to our special education teachers and support providers. So our school psychologists, as you can see here, they attended the annual California Association of School Psychologists conference and a conference on zone of regulation. And our paraprofessionals attended the Crisis Prevention Institute training. So we were very excited to be able to continue to provide differentiated support to our staff. Next slide, please. So here in special education, assessing and mitigating learning loss. In June of 2020, Senate Bill 98 was amended so that the emergency circumstance consideration would be embedded. And what this requires, it required that we provide and outlined how students would be receiving their services during an emergency. And that needed to be included in the IEPs of our students. We also have distance learning plan that was added to the bill. And that was recommended that we provide an outline of how distance learning would support the needs of our students with an IEP. For recoupment and regression, this specific bullet talks about how will we ensure that students who have regressed have an opportunity to mediate that regression. And that is through the extended school year, and that is during the summer. So students that are assessed and have to mediate their loss of learning based on need, they are allowed to extend their school year, which happens during summer school. Teachers who are considered moderate to severe, they assess their students with the SANDE, which is an inventory to see what goals and objectives they have met and which ones they have not met. For teachers that have students that are mild to moderate, they will be utilizing the district assessments to see the progress on students' IEPs and determine if they will need other forms of support. Next slide, please. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Laura Rivas.
Yes, good evening. In terms of our English learners and providing that support for designated integrated instruction for language learners, the primary support for our English learners focuses on assisting students in acquiring that language and moving up the proficiency levels while they're learning the content. So that primary support is embedded in the classroom. And examples of that, the way that is done is through teacher modeling and guiding the students while they provide some of that direct instruction with the linguistic features. Key practices to support English learners in the classroom include differentiated instruction and collaborative work. So small groups and having students partner up with other kids to work on their language development. To support teachers with this ELD instruction, we continue to provide learning experiences through relevant professional development. And for that, we have flexible PD that we've offered to meet the needs, schedules, and goals of teachers. And we have multiple avenues and formats and content that we offer. So for example, we have some after-school PD around specific topics, including newcomer strategies or integration of technology and some subject-specific application. We've also offered online bite-sized PD that are 10-minute videos that show specific strategies in topics like engaging students in the virtual classroom, creating a choice board. And this gives our teachers access to on-demand and practical learning opportunities. We've also featured coffee group collaborations where teachers have an opportunity to sign up for one-on-one meetings and receive some coaching support with our ELD program specialist. It is important to note that PD can also be tailored to sites, so our principals and teachers can request targeted professional development support. And we also have resources available for teachers and staff from access to field trip opportunities to presentations and tutorials, as well as websites and technology platforms to support their classroom needs. Next slide. With virtual tutoring, we've offered opportunities for academic support. And to do this, we continue to offer it at both the elementary and the secondary levels. At the elementary schools, the focus has been on closing the gaps in language arts and math, and teachers work with students in small groups. Instruction targets assess gaps as students work on Ingenuity and Success Maker with specifically targeted content. We also have paper online homework help service for students in grades 2 through 6, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At the intermediate level, our teachers are working with students in small groups. Impact teachers work on Wednesdays during the instructional day on content and skills that are identified as areas of need by the site. And at the high school level, we've organized virtual tutoring with college tutors. And some of our college tutors are even assigned to work in specific classroom, for example, in ELD and Algebra 1 classes to provide that support for students who need it in the classroom. Our tutors also work after school to provide that individual one-to-one support, and that schedule opens up tutoring for our secondary students from 3:30 to 7 o'clock at night. At Santana, we have one-on-one tutoring and support from the impact teachers during the day, as well as a tutor that's assigned to math classes. And obviously our Santana students can also participate in the after-school tutoring with the college tutors that's available at the comprehensive high schools. Next slide, please. As far as supporting our students at home, there's a couple of things that we've done. So as you know, we are bridging the learning gaps, and we've made a strong commitment to supporting reading at home with the allocation of resources. So at the TK to six level, we've sent students 20 book titles from a variety of genres that were recommended by Teachers College, and they're connected to the units of study in reading and writing. Students also have access to RAS Kids leveled readers at the elementary level. And for our secondary students in grade 7 to 12, they also received 10 book titles from a variety of genres to support reading at home that is connected to core subject areas and disciplines, including science and social studies at various levels and points of interest. So the book bundles were organized by grade level and sent to the students to support that reading. Additionally, our students received school materials and supplies that would enable them to actively participate in the learning experience. Next slide. As far as supporting the whole child, we have some social emotional support provided through our behavioral and educational support team, also known as BEST, our psychologists and school counselors. The BEST team provide interventions and supports for some students and their teachers, as well as providing weekly resources for staff and administration. They also offer training on behavior and social emotional learning and support. And this training is also offered for parents. Our school psychologists provide social emotional learning and support through one-to-one meetings and check-ins, as well as counseling services as written in the IEPs. They also provide trauma-informed relationships, social skills, and whole school support by modeling and providing some training. They also support or work around suicide prevention, including conducting threat assessments and outreach programs, as well as providing parents strategies. So they connect parents with external and internal programs, such as the Family Resource Center and various other outreach programs. Our counselors work to support their school sites in the outreach and support efforts by calling the home and holding one-on-one meetings with students. And obviously principals and administration work and coordinate with counselors to provide that support. Next slide, please. As far as the re-engagement plan for students who are not getting or being connected with our learning, we have a three-tiered system. And the first tier is a universal tier, and this addresses the entire student body. And that's the first level of support, which includes promoting a positive school attendance. So examples of that might include schools holding raffles or giving rewards to promote that attendance. And really, essentially, it's making school fun and engaging for kids. The second tier is the early intervention. This is the next level of support for students who are not engaged in learning. And so an example at that tier would include one-on-one Zoom meetings with a teacher or an administrator. Tier three is the more targeted or more intense tier for a smaller subset of our students. So examples of what may be done at this tier include SART meetings, counseling services, or even a referral to FRC. Next slide, please. Obviously, we've heard a lot about our Family Resource Center that provides a lot of ongoing support for our neediest of families. And here in this picture, you'll see a liaison giving supplies to district patrol for possible McKinney students in the neighborhood. So some examples of supports that have come out of the FRC include providing laptops that allow our students to add a virtual background. They've also provided training regarding McKinney students scheduled throughout the year. And this goes to our site staff members, both certificated and classified. We've also had additional support for college-bound students for the Foster and Title I, where they provide some in-depth one-on-one support sessions with applications, financial aid, and other things that are essential for college. Our community liaisons are also equipped to help students connect to a variety of resources, including but not limited to mental health, clothing, hygiene needs, translation support, and various other supports. And we also have parent and grandparent workshops that include the Wellness Wednesdays, Tech Bites, and Go-Go Grandparents. Next slide. And we recognize that working and supporting our families, especially in this environment, is important because students are learning from home. So parents have been supported throughout the pandemic. For example, we've included summer learning about our online platforms like Seesaw, Zoom, and Google Classroom. And that ongoing support has included things like we just mentioned previously, like the Tech Bites and other workshops that are offered. We've also addressed parent-specific needs for training through the parent advisory councils, which include our school site councils, our district English learner advisory council, and the superintendent's council. Recently, our parents attended the Parent Involvement Academy and the CAVE conference. The picture that you see there shows parents attending the PIA, which is a Parent Involvement Academy. We've also implemented the use of Parent Square to facilitate communication with our families. And I'm going to pass it on to Dr. Huff.
Yeah, good evening. As Dr. Zamora and Dr. Rivas have shared all the work from this year, we really can't overstate how proud we are of all the work from the Rowland community, the staff, the teachers, the students, the families coming together this year to really provide a high quality education for our students in this very unique year. And as we look forward to the end of the year and into the summer and the next fall, as we start to welcome kids back, we're very excited about opportunities to start seeing students in person. And the first stepping stone for that is this end of the year, April 26th through June 3rd. And following up on the board meeting from March 15th and the direction from the board, we are taking that direction to start to develop in-person opportunities for students starting April 26th through the end of the year on June 3rd. That would have the parameters of two hours a week, 2 days a week, and driven by teacher identification and considering also parent request as that those opportunities are developed. So the first step following that board direction has been engaging all of our stakeholders in identifying what does this look like. So these are the parameters in the board direction. And so you can see a list here of all the different groups that are currently engaged in ongoing discussion and collaboration or fleshing out the details of what this will look like. So starting with the principal meetings and the site leadership, looking at Dr. Mitchell's reopening committee that includes representatives from both classified, certificated, teacher leadership, looking at all the different components and angles to make this come to life. And then also a teacher subcommittee, a classified subcommittee to look at those details. And then of course, our labor unions in collaborating around what this is gonna look like when we bring students back for this first step of in-person opportunities in the afternoon starting in April 26. So this is still, we're still working with all the groups to develop what this looks like. So we're gonna look at what this might, some examples of this at both the elementary and the secondary level. The focus really is on flexibility. So flexibility at the site level and the classroom level, driven by teachers to help identify what this will look like. The schedule, as we look at what afternoons we will be engaging in these in-person opportunities for students, they will be occurring on either a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday afternoons at the site, protecting that Wednesday time for the teacher collaboration that's been in place for this year, this school year. And then looking at who will attend, identifying small groups of students that are informed by student needs, around either academic needs, so academic intervention or possibly enrichment opportunities, and also providing social emotional support in those afternoons. And so again, I wanna stress that this is still being developed and fleshed out with these groups that I just mentioned, and then back at the sites, as sites begin to flesh this out. But some possible examples at the elementary level might look like cohorts of students that teachers identify that are driven by academic needs, perhaps around the content areas or specific academic skills, reading, writing, English language development, or social emotional support. And these groups may be flexible or may vary based on the type of support that's being offered at that time. So this continues to be developed and fleshed out with all the stakeholders. At the secondary level, it's the same focus on flexibility. I think as Dr. Zamora walked us through, it's gonna look a little bit different at the secondary level. And I think Dr. Mitchell also had mentioned at the last board meeting too, with the way the schedules are set up, there's a little bit more challenging the secondary level because we have those classes that are scheduled in the afternoon. But the same focus on flexibility, depending on the site needs, the same schedule of happening on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday or Friday afternoons, with those Wednesdays being protected teacher planning times, as it has been this year. And then also focus on small groups that are driven by student need, teacher choice, and or parent request. So some possible examples on the secondary level, because we already have students that are rostered in those afternoons, could possibly look like some students being brought onto campus from those classes that are occurring in the afternoon during those times that they're taking their classes. It could also look like blocks of content areas, so ELA or math, science or social studies, that are blocked out in the afternoon where students are brought in for in-person support. It could also look like students that are brought in based on other intervention needs, such as social emotional needs, study skills, opportunities for in-person engagement, in-person mentoring. So I know we've said this multiple times, but just to stress again, this is still a work in progress, and the stakeholders are taking the direction of the board and fleshing this out. But these are some examples of what this might look like as we look into the April 26 date of starting to offer these in-person supports.
So Dr. Huff, before we move on, Dr. Rodriguez, to summer learning, I'd like to see if the board has, if there are any questions that we may answer. I know we've given you quite a bit.
I just have a couple. For the homework, for the help for students, are we gonna be using our contract that we have with papers?
Yes, that is something that will continue. It's available to our students 24/7. So that is definitely a contract that continues.
Okay, and you mentioned the best staff and the in-service training that was given to the teachers. I'm thinking that since that training was provided, we've gone through some difficult times, both for students and staff. And I'm just wondering if we could utilize some of those best staff just to help the teachers understand what some of the difficulties the students are going through as far as isolation, being away, and just things to be aware of when you work with the students, that you might get some rebellious behavior or resistance, and what's the underlying motivation for that, so that they would be better prepared on how to respond to that if they get that from the students, such as refusing to turn their camera on and things like this.
Yes, that is definitely something we can do. And you're right, students are finding it, some students are thriving online, And some students are doing okay, and some students are struggling. So definitely something we can do.
And the last question is, when you mentioned the collaboration and you listed those groups, I think Dr. Mitchell has a parent group that she meets with either monthly or quarterly. I wonder if they could be involved in that collaboration also.
Yes, I can answer that. We did look at that, and there is a possibility. The meeting schedules that are already set do not align. However, we have reached out to them and for other reasons, and can continue to do so to pull them together if they're interested in continuing conversations as needed. So yes, that is a possibility.
Any other questions? I have a question, Dr. Samara, for the current daily schedule for the TK, and we have two breaks in the morning, but the grade, first grade to sixth grade, and we have only one break, 15-minute break, and 10:15, but after that, there's no recess time, no break time. Was there any problem, or why we don't let the kids take a short break?
So you're right. On the TK K, there's a stretch break from 9:15, and then there's a break from 10:15 to 10:20. It's only five.
But that's 15. Okay. But the first grade to sixth grade, there's no break, and it's just one break.
Yes. However, teachers can always do a stretch break. It's not anything that can't be done by an individual teacher feeling that their students need a stretch break or a break from looking at their screen. That is always an option that a teacher can say, you know, I think that today it feels like today we need two breaks. Mm-hmm. But at any point during the day, there's always a stretch break that a teacher can take or do some kind of activity to help the kids kind of unwind or settle down or something of the kind. But no, there was no issue. It's just definitely something that they can do on their own.
I have three questions.
It's done.
Okay. The first one, thank you so much for explaining disengaged. I saw that word and I thought, what is that? I was wondering, what are we doing with those 868 students to help them to get more engaged?
So if Dr. Huff can go back to the slide with the re-engagement plan. Our Director of Student Support Services is online, Annette Ramirez. Would you like to share a little bit more?
And mute for us, Annette. Okay.
Hey, Dr. Mitchell. So good evening, everyone. This really starts at the school sites and starting with the universal of promoting that culture of positive attendance for everyone. And that comes with, and our teachers have done such a fabulous job, even doing virtual learning, making school fun, making it engaging, having raffles, having competitions, rewards, movie nights, I was saying bingo nights, every kind of thing to get kids continuously engaged in their school. And just creating that positive atmosphere about attendance is important, whether you're in person or virtual, and that's being in school and on time. And then this is where the schools come in, tracking and calling when students are not engaged. And that comes from the principal, the teachers, and our classified staff. Our attendance clerks are working every day, making those one-on-one phone calls, making sure that those students are there and in person. Virtually. So everybody is coming together universally to make sure that students are engaged. And now tier two, the early intervention is when we start noticing those students. And again, our teachers do such a great job of knowing their students. And that's why it's so important to know our students and know our families so they know who's missing, why they're missing, what can we do. And that's when the one-on-one calls come in. Have a Zoom, call in the counselors, bring the parent and the student into a Zoom meeting and making sure that it does not get past that tier two. So those are the kind of things. It just becomes a little bit smaller and more one-on-one. And then when the tier three, it's just a little bit more intensified and targeted. And that's when you'll see things like a SART, assume when we bring in the counselor, the admin, and the teacher, what is going on? It could mean an FRC referral. It could mean some counseling. Like, there's a reason this is happening. Let's get to it so we could fix the other problem, is the tier three. So I hope that helps.
That was terrific. I want to know what we're doing, and we're doing a lot to get them more engaged. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Donna, can I jump in here? Because I have a question on the same slide and I didn't want her to go away. So do we know the reasons why they're not engaged? Are we tracking that information?
There are so many reasons they're not engaged. And just from recently being at the school site, I could tell you the reasons that we're hearing from students. And sometimes it is just fear. They don't want to be on camera because of the situation in their home. It could be that they're embarrassed of their family, what their home looks like. Some of them are just not happy with the virtual learning and want to be with their friends in person and be more social. We had some of them, you know, are sharing computers, which doesn't happen with us anymore because in our district, everybody gets their own computer. So at the beginning, some students had some issues with hotspots that were clearly and quickly fixed. So we don't see any of that anymore. So most of the time it's more, you know, they're hesitant because of their home environment, or they miss that one-on-one personalized feeling of being on a school site. So it's just numerous amounts of things. We have some older kids that are taking care of the younger siblings. So just many family issues that have a
I'm such a data nerd. I like to see Pareto charts because then it jumps out at me to say, okay, it's my home life or situations. And so I would encourage something like that, because sometimes without tracking the actual problems, we might not realize, we just kind of hear it occasionally, but realize this is a big, big rock that we could chase and do something about. So
yeah, we are able to have, we have weekly sites, weekly lists by site on the disengaged students. So we are able to see some data of which students are disengaged. And then those calls are made and the school sites individually track the reasons, but something more broad would be good.
Yeah, it'd be nice to roll it up to us, because then at some point it's something that we might be able to address. If it's something universally across all school sites, it might be something that we can address as a school district and come up with an action plan.
Absolutely. And we have the resources to do it, and it's happening, but individually.
And definitely. I don't want to overthink it. I don't want to, you know, create a whole science project out of it. It was just one of those things of just how do we figure out what that is? They might know, but how do we then support that as well? So,
because there is data by school in place. So each school site knows why their students are disengaged.
Great.
Thank you.
I apologize, Ms. Friedman. I jumped in on your
end. Oh, yeah, you did.
I didn't want to come back to this slide.
Yeah, that's okay.
Perfect timing. No, and I loved all the positive things, but I'm glad you explained what we're also doing. That's very important to follow through and say, this isn't happening. What are we doing? So thank you for sharing. Okay, just two more. On page 18, you mentioned RAS kits for the elementary students for reading their books. Is that like AR? I just wanted to find out. I never heard of RAS kits.
Dr. Rodriguez can give you a little bit more specifics on that.
Sure, absolutely. So RAS Kids is a leveled platform. So students are assigned a level based on running records and their assessments. And so it's not like, well, I guess you can say it's a little like AR, but RAS Kids is very much more personalized in how we classify students in their reading level, and it is progressive. So if you have a first grader that's reading at a fourth grade level, those books are accessible to the student.
Okay, thank you. And my last question on page 21, the social emotional support, everything looks wonderful, but I was wondering about new students that teachers want to referral for either counseling or something. How are we addressing that? It's very hard with virtual, I know. But are those students being seen?
So our counselors are seeing students that are being referred. That is something that is happening.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Any more questions?
I do actually have a couple.
Eric.
So for Dr. Huff, you were talking about teacher identification and parent request for the in-person support. How are we planning on reaching out to the parents, or how do parents know that this is going to be available? I know this isn't finalized yet, But I think my concern is a child may be doing decent, and I've had parents reach out to me, that a child might be doing decent, but they have other concerns, and for them to know to be able to reach out to teachers or whoever they should be reaching out to.
I can actually answer that, okay. Mr. Venegas. So that is something that we're still working through, but we definitely want to have the schools be very much involved, because parents feel more comfortable with people that they've been engaging with sometimes for years, and they have trust in their site leadership and in their teachers. So it's definitely something that's going to come from the site, but we are still working through that.
No, perfect. I just want to make sure that the parents are going to know. They may be just more than educational. So, and it's on this page as well. I really like the word flexibility with this afternoon support. I mean, we provided direction, but in my mind, it was to keep it as flexible as possible. So I like the fact that you guys use the word flexibility, and I would support keeping that open, right? And changing it as you need be. One other thing I have is the training for the teachers earlier on, Dr. Zamora, it looked like we had a lot of great training provided to the teachers. I like the list of everything. Was this, how widespread, or what was the rate of, let me reword that. Was it a lot of teachers that did certain training, or was it widespread across all campuses? I just want to make sure it wasn't two teachers that did all this training opposed to 99% of the teachers that did some training.
No, some of it, for example, we had two district-wide trainings, mm-hmm. 2 days, I'm sorry, two district-wide 2 day trainings that were open to all of our teachers. Now, I don't have all of this data with me, but it is definitely something I can get to Dr. Mitchell.
No, it's fine. It was open to all teachers. That's perfect.
But some of it is by grade level. So you see here, Green Ninja Science sixth grade. So some of it is by grade level. Some of it is by level, TK5. Some of it, like RAS Kids, is for elementary only. The micro courses offered at the beginning of the school year were offered to all of our teachers, and a huge number of teachers took advantage of those. We were able to do some of those, a lot of this professional development we've turned into virtual trainings that teachers can log on when they have the opportunity to do so. Some of them are live. But we've had, these are not just one, two teachers. We've had great success. We can get you some of those numbers.
No, your explanation there was perfect. That's what I was looking for, to just make sure it was widespread across all areas. So thank you.
Oh yes, it is widespread. So you can see the diverse opportunities that we've offered here. Dual language professional development that addresses our dual language schools, and so on.
Perfect. Thank you. Those are all my comments.
I have a question. We probably need to bring Ananda back. I have a question back to these engaged kids. The data we have here, 868, that was data from CalPES. I believe that was October or November data in 2020 last year. So after the efforts we made, do you have the current data? How are the kids doing now? Are they we got less kids disengaged or more, or how, what's the change between now and the last year in fall?
Dr. Zamora, I'm happy to respond to that.
Oh, that would be great.
Okay. So the data you see here, 868, is the current data as of March 17th on our ARI student information system of students that are disengaged, chronically absent, 10% or more of the year.
So these are current data?
This is current data as of March 17th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. I thought the data come from the CalPES data. They do the data collection once a year.
That is correct. So all the other data you see listed above that, uh-huh. is captured was captured on the first Wednesday of October on Seabeds Day and was certified through our CalPADS.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
Yeah. But the last data point there, 868, is the most current data. And we don't actually report chronic absenteeism until this summer, once the school year is up and we can clean the data. And then we report that and certify it with the state. So that's not certified till about July.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Huff.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone have any more questions?
I just want to add one more thing. I don't want a response as for information. Ms. Friedman and I were judging some of the CTE projects, career technical education projects. And one of the groups did a project on mental health. That was really an eye opener as to how they see how these students are being affected. And one of the things that they mentioned, which really surprised me, was that when asked, are they excited about coming back to school and meeting their teachers, they expressed fear and concern because they said, we don't know who, we never met our teachers. So we're kind of scared to meet them in person. So maybe when they come back, we might be able to do a little open house type thing or something to slowly work them in. But it was interesting when they mentioned that during their presentation, that they're actually afraid to meet their teachers in person that they've been with all semester long or all quarter long.
Oh, I just want to add, since you said that, David, there were some more presentations this week, and those students were very excited to come back onto campus. Most of them were seniors, and so they're excited. But what I thought you were going to mention is that group on mental awareness. They were saying that they would like the counselors to say, oh, how are you? Are you having a good day? They would like that kind of, they want people to know that they care about them. And I thought that was very interesting that they would like more people to care about what's going on in their lives.
The term they used was check-in.
That's right.
And apparently there's a psychology teacher in Nogales that does that with her students. She just checks in with them periodically to see how they're doing. And they said how meaningful that was to have that check-in.
Thank you. Thank you for that information.
But I think we're getting off base now.
So we will go now to summer learning, slide 28. I believe it's 28.
Yes, good evening, everyone. I will be speaking to our summer school, our summer learning this upcoming summer. So the goal and the purpose of summer school is to provide a robust summer program for our roll-in students with the opportunity to close gaps as a result of learning loss around language arts and mathematics at the elementary level, and to provide credit recovery at the high school level. This will support high school graduation. In addition, we will provide onboarding opportunities for students to connect to their new school setting. This will allow for students to bridge their transition from elementary to intermediate and from intermediate to high school. Next slide. Summer school will be offered in person, and if in person is not an option for our families, online learning will be available. We anticipate this to be more limited, but families will have a choice in instruction when selecting an instructional model. We want all of our students who need support to have access. For this reason, we are working to provide in-person learning, since the students who are being invited may be currently struggling in an online setting. So in this slide indicates the location as to where we are offering summer schools at the elementary, intermediate, and high school levels at the times, and the times may vary based on instructional levels and site locations. At every level, summer school will function between 4 and 5 weeks. So for the elementary level, the schools that will host summer school will be Blandford, Jellick, Yorbita, Hurley, and Northam, and more if needed. If we need additional sites, we can add that. That can be an option. At the intermediate level, it would be Alvarado, Giano, Oswalt, Telesis, and Ibarra Academy. And lastly, at the high school level, we will offer summer school at Nogales High School, Roland High School, and Santana High School. Next slide, please. Extended School Year is an individual instructional program for eligible students with disabilities that is provided beyond the regular school year. The eligibility criteria is determined by the individualized education plan team. Every plan is determined by the student's individual disability and needs and goals. Extended School Year will be at two sites this year. The locations are to be determined, and students in the program will attend summer school for 2 hours. For our moderate to severe students, they will attend summer school at the community day school. Their day will consist of 3 hours of instruction. Next slide, please. Like the the instructional model for our K through sixth grade students, in-person summer school will be offered to all students to mitigate learning loss and to provide intervention in reading, writing, and mathematics. Students have been identified based on formative assessments and teacher recommendations. In addition to an in-person instruction, online learning will be available again to our families that wish to do so and remain virtual. Thank you. Like the elementary level, our seventh and eighth grade students will receive targeted instruction for students that need instructional support based on the formative assessment data. Summer school will be offered in person as well as online for our families electing virtual instruction. Summer school is intended to offer academic support, and the onboarding is intended to help students acclimate to their new schools to make the transition smoother from elementary school to intermediate school. This will support the transition to their new school environment. Next slide, please. There are three summer school models for the high schools: in-person classes, virtual classes, and onboarding classes. The in-person model serves to provide in-person learning for students who did not pass a class during the school year. The virtual model serves as a pathway to students who wish to improve their grades on a course already taken, or are in need of a credit recovery in the event they are unable to attend in person. And onboarding classes support students that will transition from intermediate to high school. These courses will offer an introduction to the high school campus and rituals and routines. Normally, these classes are offered in person, but will be offered virtually if necessary to meet the needs of our families and students. The high school level addresses four key areas, as I mentioned: credit recovery, grade repair, go-ahead opportunities, and onboarding to support the transition to high school. The format will include both in-person and virtual remote learning opportunities to meet these varied needs. We continue to partner with Mount SAC, which provides a rich summer program. These classes will be offered virtually to meet the conditions of this partnership. Next slide, please. Finally, multiple measures and criteria will be used to identify students who can benefit from extended summer learning opportunities. As in the past, counselors continue to identify students for summer school. At the secondary level, families will be surveyed on their interest to participate in person summer learning to help build classes and sections for the in-person and virtual offerings. Priority will be given to students who have been identified for academic support for in-person opportunities, but families will be accommodated to the greatest degree possible within the schedule. Next slide, please. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Zamora to talk a little around the school year coming in the fall.
Thank you, Dr. Rodriguez. Next slide, please. So we, as we prepare for 2021-22 school year, we know that we will resume in person to the greatest extent possible. The school year and course offerings are being planned so that it mirrors pre-pandemic opportunities for our students. We of course need to follow the guidance of the county office, the LA County Department of Public Health, and make sure that we are aligned students and staff. So knowing that we are coming back to in-person, we also know that there will be situations where an online option will be a must, and we are planning for some sort of virtual academy for students that are, for some reason, not able to come back to in-person. Next slide, please. So this again reiterates that we will provide an all virtual academy for as an option for our parents and students. We will not be going into a simultaneous model. Next slide, please. And so with that, I'd like to see if there are any questions that the board may have.
Okay, questions.
I have some.
Okay. Donna, I see, yeah. And then okay. Eric.
Donna.
Well, Eric, you wanna go first?
No, go ahead, Ms. Freeman.
Okay. All right, on page 30, now I have the right page number because mine was different. On the locations, what are we going to do with students that are at like Hollingworth, Shellen, Killian? How are they going to get, are they going to be able to go to the other schools, and are we going to provide transportation?
So for summer school, it's when it's not at the students' school, homeschool, they are able to attend any other school that is closest to them. And we have in the past provided transportation.
Okay, that's good to know.
What we do, Donna, is we divide our district into quadrants because we do not have summer programs at all 19 of our schools. And so it's a smaller number of students that we serve. So we have the district within quadrants so that there are close schools to students. And if the need for enrollment is such we need to add schools, we can do that. And then we evaluate transportation needs.
Okay, thank you. And also, what about the online? I know that you said the secondary parents will be able to be surveyed, but are all parents going to be surveyed, elementary and high school, to see if they are going to want summer online or in person? How will that work?
So when we, at the elementary level, it is, we identify students based on certain formative and summative assessments. We provide those lists to the site, and we also have the site add additional students if they feel that other students would benefit from the summer program. And when we inform the parents, we will be able to give them that information. So if I call if I inform Dr. Huff's parents that he needs to attend summer school, the parents will have the opportunity to say, Brian will be there in person or online. So parents will be informed that they have that opportunity.
And what if the parents are not invited? Can they say, I really want my child to go to summer school? Will they be able to go?
When we have students, we do take and provide a wait list to make sure that we can first accommodate all of the students that have to be in summer school. And then we go based on that wait list.
Okay, and my last one is on the second page. It says fall 2021. I was just wondering why it went to December of 21. Is that because we think that things aren't going to change? It's not the full year like June 2022.
We don't think that things are going to change. Let me see.
It's the second page. This one.
So that is, I can tell you that that is probably a typo.
Well, that's the dates of fall semester. So when we talk about, it doesn't, if it said the 21-22 school year, it would have gone through June. But the fall semester concludes in December of 2021.
But okay. If you're thinking the full year, Donna, it would be
correct.
The full year also. Okay, yes. Thank you very much. Great presentation, all of you, Ed Department, thank you. Good job.
Eric?
If we can go to slide 30, please, back to slide 30. And Ms. Friedman was touching on this, and I think I just wanna expand on this a little bit. The in-person summer learning, and I know at the high school level, you talked about a wait list. And I wonder if we just want to consider expanding this to see as many kids that want to do summer in person that we offer it to them. It's I know it's not something we've done in the past, but it's not just for grade recovery or just getting on campus. I know we need resources and teachers, but this is all optional, right? And getting as many people we can get, or kids and students, back onto the campus for this.
So for summer school, there are some considerations that we take into account. And the biggest consideration is we take around summer school is staffing. So we know that our teachers also need a break. And at times we don't have the number of staff to serve, you know, as many as we would like. And so that kind of limits the number of students that we can take for the summer. And then also it could be, if we are still under the guidance of the Department of Health, it could be the number of students that can be in a classroom at a time. So there's a couple of things that could limit us with regards to inviting everybody who wants to be in summer school to be in person.
No, understood. Yeah, we still have to follow the guidelines for Department of Health, right? And it sounds like it's a limiter is educators. That might be why we couldn't offer more. So it's just something to consider. And then on page 34, the onboarding classes, what are these exactly? Are these aren't A to G classes. These are more seminars, or they're not for credit?
Dr. Zamora.
Go ahead, Dr.
I muted myself. I do apologize for that. Those onboarding classes are more to support that transition. And so they could be anywhere from, for example, at Gianna, you might see the school preparing courses that would transition their kids to their Pride motto and learning, teaching them how that works and how that operates and the expectations and how to manage that. But at the high school level, you might see maybe the students are struggling academically, so they might bring in kids for, let's say we're going to give them math support, but we're also going to partner it with a skills-based class where they can get some skills to be ready to tackle that high school. So those would be, for example, at the high school, credit-bearing courses, but at the middle school, they wouldn't be credit-bearing courses, as credits don't really accumulate or count towards the students moving up upgrade levels at the intermediate. But the idea with the onboarding classes is recognizing that moving from one level to the next is difficult, right? So the approach that the middle schools might take is slightly different than the high schools, right? Because they're coming from a one teacher setting to the first time they get to see six teachers, right? And so this is maybe a bigger outreach for kids just to kind of help with that transition, kind of walking them through what that might look like. But at the high school, the kids have already been in a six period setting and they're moving, but there are still some challenges that go with that, right? So supporting students to make it to the high school and be more successful by targeting maybe some skill deficits or some gaps and inviting them there. So I hope that addresses the question.
That does. Thank you very much.
I just want to add something that Eric said about the wait list. And I was just thinking, if our wait list gets very long, is it possible to offer more classes for these students that the parents really want them to come to school in the summer?
We can definitely take that in consideration based on our ability to staff and house the numbers. So definitely something that we can look at.
How do you figure out the staff? Do you ask the staff, would you be interested in teaching summer school? And then they do a survey?
What we do is we do post it. Human resources does assist us. Dennis does assist us in posting the information about summer school, and then teachers apply for summer school if they would like to do it.
And if we have more than apply that we have planned for the classes, then we could possibly have more classes for our students.
Yes. Again, depending on what our guidance is from the County Department of Health, okay. If we're allowed to have, and that's for in-person. For virtual, we can, the classes don't have to be that small, but again, it depends on the number of teachers that we get that are interested.
Thank you.
And generally, we do accommodate most, but we do take in consideration that there's a certain number of kids that have to come to summer school, either because they are needing intervention at the elementary level and the middle school level, or because they're needing credit recovery at the high school level.
Instead of having a wait list, can we just, I would suggest having a more virtual classes instead of them on a wait list, do more virtual classes at that point in time. Hopefully the teachers will be more accommodating or will be staffed better.
Well, at this point, I want to interject that right now we're planning for 100 classes at the elementary level for in-person summer school, which historically we've been always able to meet the need and interest of parents. So as Dr. Zamora has shared, our principals reach out to students who need summer school. And sometimes there may be a sibling that doesn't have an academic need, but the parent would like to have siblings enrolled. And pending that space is available, absolutely, we will be able to do so. We have not previously had wait lists. We have been able to accommodate everyone who has had an interest in summer programs. This year is a little bit different because looking at the restrictions with the health department and making sure we're following all the health department, we're planning for class sizes of 14, which is a little bit smaller than what we have typically planned in summer. Previous years, we've planned for our elementary numbers at approximately 20. So we are there. I understand, Ms. Gonzalez, the interest in expanding online summer programs, but our students are struggling in the online environment. And so we are trying to transition and move to an in-person program to make sure that we're able to support our students in that in-person format, particularly for those students who have struggled in an online format. So having them back on campus and able to work with their teachers in person as well. So we will keep the board updated in terms of where we are with invitations, enrollment, and interest, and let you know if there even is a need for a wait list.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
David?
I just have two questions. One is, I assume we're keeping track of those students, especially in elementary school, that might not be promoted because they're not doing that well in virtual classrooms. And if we could, you know, target those students to try to bring them up to grade level so they can be promoted and not be held back. I feel that if you hold back a student, especially in the elementary school levels, it affects them all throughout their school life because they're always older than their peers in the classroom. So if we could just, you know, give us a little special attention to the elementary school students that might not be promoted due to their learning deficiencies during virtual learning. The other one is, you mentioned the virtual academy. Has it been decided yet whether that'll be a, that'll cover all grades or only cover certain grade levels?
We have not finalized that information. Okay. It's something that needs to be fleshed out, and I wouldn't wanna give you information that is premature. So it's definitely something that we need to flesh out.
And would that be similar to like a charter school that the school district would run? Or would that just be a continuation with the virtual learning experience?
We are planning to have our own dynamic virtual academy. So if when you say like the charter schools, I know that there are some charter schools that are completely online. This is definitely something that will be completely online, but very much on RUSD program to make sure that our kids are not feeling like they're missing out. And we are planning for all grade levels. What it will look like is something that we're still working on.
Yeah, that's what I would prefer, that it would be our virtual academy.
Our
teachers running it.
So it will definitely be our own way of addressing the rigorous program and standards by grade level.
Yeah, that's great. you know, I just want to say that watching this presentation, it's kind of like a juggler that has to juggle three balls at the same time. I mean, you got the end of this school year, you got the summer school year, you got the beginning in the fall, and you're doing this all at one time in a very collapsed period of time. And I admire how well you did this presentation tonight and how you were able to handle all those different balls at the same time and put some organization to it that it made sense. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Any more questions? I have a question for the secondary schools. I have a concern, some of the high school and junior high school classes had equipment or hands-on, such as lab classes. So in the summer, I think there's good opportunity for them to go back to the lab, because we offer in person. So what is our plan for the labs, for the like chemistry lab or physics or bio?
Dr. Rivas, the plan is, I mean, Dr. Rivas can expand, but the plan is to provide as many experiences as possible that we provide during the in-person instruction during the regular school year. Dr. Rivas, is there something else you'd like to share?
Yeah, just to expand a little bit on that is obviously the in-person classes will be in the school setting, so teachers do have access to their classrooms and their materials. However, activities like labs may be a little bit more challenging because you can't do them in groups, right? But also recognizing that the time frame in which they have to cover the curriculum is a lot more condensed, right? So we are not doing a full semester, yet students are going through that. So it is limited, but there is opportunity for that to be demonstrated. There's demonstrations, there's data that can be collected. And so that's up to at the teacher's discretion, how they fold that in, but they are in a traditional classroom setting that can provide for some of those opportunities. For the virtual setting, we had mentioned earlier in the presentation that we had purchased Gizmos as a platform that provides our students access to virtual activities that simulate sort of like an experiment in some cases, and they're able to play around with different variables and see how the conditions might change whatever it is that they're looking at. So that, while it doesn't replace the lab setting, it does provide an opportunity for students to sort of explore scientific concepts through that form and kind of formulate that scientific thinking through it. So they will be limited, but there will be opportunities depending on the teachers and obviously how they build and set up their classrooms, because there's still a lot of obviously discretion for the teachers to set up those experiences, but it will be much more limited for sure.
Thank you. I have another question. How about the IB program, high school IB? And are these all going to be satisfy the IB requirements, or have the IB changed their requirements for IB graduation, IB diploma?
I can also respond to that. We have received notification earlier in February from the IB that they have designated two ways for the students to earn their diploma, and that was either the examination route, which students would have to take their examination in a traditional format that we've seen in the past. And for schools or districts that would not be able to do that in person, they provided a non-exam route. So that would allow students to demonstrate their proficiency through current and already work that they've already completed, right? And then based on schools' performance in the past, there's a designation for the number, for the categories and how students will be rated in those exams. So earlier in February, the IB had conducted surveys across the region, the state, and across obviously their international systems to figure out how and where schools were at with providing in person. So at the time of the survey, districts responded to where they were at. And at that time, we were obviously looking at a more stricter opening requirements, and things are starting to move towards more flexible opening opportunities, but we were very restricted back in February. So based on that survey that was done and performed regionally and across the state, they assigned districts that designation. So we were assigned both at Nogales and at Roland a non-examination route. So the non-examination route is the route that we're going. However, students will still be able to earn their diploma through that route. And that provides an opportunity for all kids. With the examination route, some students, if they wouldn't be able to come in person, so let's say a family was in an IB situation, taking an IB exam, and they chose not to come in person, then they would have to postpone their assessment to later, would not be able to participate in the examination. So the non-exam route provides the opportunity for all students, regardless of whether they can come in person or not, the opportunity to earn their diploma that way.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Any more questions? Okay, all right.
Thank you. I
have a final question. I have a final question for Dr. Mitchell. The first page, the student population, the current population is 12,741. And what is our estimate expecting 2021-22 students? I think we lose quite a lot. And what was the population before before this year's 2019 year?
You know what, Mr. Chen, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm sorry, I don't have that on the top of my head of what it was. We did do a full analysis of our enrollment and what our enrollment projections were compared to the actual. I do know at the beginning of the year, I did provide that information. I'm sorry, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I can find it and provide
it. Yeah, later, yeah.
You know, our the transitional kindergarten and kindergarten were the two grades where we had students that were registered, and that was the greatest number of students that did not come when we were in an all virtual setting. So that was the grade levels that, and we have continued to stay in contact with those families and encouraging them to come for first grade or kindergarten for the 21-22 school year. But I can get you that information.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so... So no more questions, and thank you very much, Dr. Samora and your team prepared such a detailed plan in a really short period of time. Thank you very much. And so are we?
Before we close, can I just,
I'd
just like to definitely thank Educational Services, but also Administrative Services and Human Resources for all their support. This is not just our department putting our heads together. It takes a lot of people. I want to thank our teachers, our administrators, and our support staff. It is definitely a team approach. We're all in this together, and I do want to thank everyone, including our teachers and support staff for all they do, and our administrators. And thank you for your leadership and guidance.
Thank you. Anyone has any comments before adjourn the meeting?
We don't have comments this evening on the agenda. We don't have board member comments
on the agenda. Okay. So we are ready to adjourn the meeting. So I need a motion to adjourn the study session of Roland Unified School District Board of Education.
I'll move.
Donna, move. And a second.
I'll second.
All right, David, second. All right, roll call. Donna Freeman.
Aye.
Agnes Gonzalez.
Aye.
David Malkin.
Aye.
Eric Venegas.
Aye.
Kerry Chen, aye. 5-0, motion carries. Motion to carry and adjourn meeting at 6 o'clock. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Good night. Mm-hmm.